Up next, an alarming study about Alaska's crumbling coastline. You've probably heard about Arctic ice melting because of climate change, but how about melting dirt? It may seem strange, but it's a reality for people who live in places like Alaska, where much of the coast is made of permafrost. We have the ice and your soil are basically one and the same. And so when the permafrost on the Alaskan coast melts because of warming temperature, the dirt goes with it right into the ocean, leaving a mess of issues for the people living on a dwindling shore. And in some cases, that shore is dwindling now in some places in Alaska at an alarming rate. Here to talk about a new study that measures the rate of erosion on part of that Alaskan coast is Chris Arpey. He's a research ecologist for a branch of the U.S. Geological Survey called the Alaska Science Center. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks, Ira. It's good to be here.
Tell us about this Alaskan erosion. Is it 45 inches per year?
45 feet per year.
45 feet per year.
That's right, in the area that we're working. But I just want to stress that that the Alaska coastline is one of the is about 6,000 miles long, which is quite a bit longer than the rest of the coastline in the lower 48. And the area that we actually studied is only about 40-mile segment that's located along the Beaufort Sea coast.
Right.
But what we found at this particular area is that for the time period that we have aerial photography to actually analyze the change in the coastline position, that erosion rates have gone from about 22 feet per year from 1955 to 79, 29 feet per year from 79 to 02, and then in the last 5 years, about 45 feet per year. And I also want to stress that that's just an average for that stretch of coastline, and there's parts of that same coastline that are actually building from deposition of sediment, and then other areas that are eroding much, much faster than 45 feet per year, rather.
Mm-hmm. And so why are you so interested in this particular area that you're studying?
Well, that's interesting, actually. I guess the main reason is actually concern for a small goose that likes to molt there called a black brant. And so this segment of coastline is part of the Teshikpuk Lake special area, which is part of the National Petroleum Reserve. And it's called a special area primarily because it provides critical wildlife habitat, mostly for migratory birds, but also a resident caribou herd. And so the USGS got some funding to help try to understand how climate change was impacting wildlife populations in that area. And we started this kind of multidisciplinary study. And the lead author on this work, Ben Jones, is a geographer who's been working in that area for quite a while, along with Ken Hinkle, who's at the University of Cincinnati, and two wildlife biologists, Joel Schmutz and Paul Flint. So it was an interdisciplinary project. And part of that was trying to understand coastal erosion and actually how that impacts lakes that these geese use for habitat.
Mm-hmm. And what is causing this accelerated erosion? Are you pretty sure that it is climate change, global warming?
Well, you know, it's a pretty complex system up there, and I guess I should probably explain just a little bit more about how erosion works there compared to other types of environments. Mm-hmm. So as you already mentioned, it's a ice-rich permafrost environment. So in the upper, say, 10 feet of soil, you can have upwards of 90% ice within that soil column. And so when heat gets applied to that and that ice melts out, the ground subsides and, you know, falls into the ocean. So erosion there actually works by what's called thermal mechanical niche erosion. And so once the ice actually moves away from the coastline, I also want to stress that about 75% of the year that the ice is actually frozen right up against the shoreline. So there's actually no erosion going on. But once that moves away and the open water can contact the base of the bluff, it starts carving a wedge back underneath this block. And once it gets back there far enough, which may be, you know, 10 feet, 30 feet, the block will actually collapse off and fall into the ocean, and then that can melt away. The ice in that can melt away pretty quickly, and then kind of that episode starts again. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're probably aware that the sea ice has been declining much more rapidly than it had been predicted. In 2007, I think, was the record low fall sea ice extent.
Right.
And so having ice move away from the coast that much faster allows probably a longer period of time for that erosion to occur, so more of these ice block collapse episodes.
So the ice was protecting the coastal area. Now there's no ice there to protect it, and you have the wave action getting in and eroding it even further.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then so also storms used to be probably one of the main drivers of erosion in this area, and they probably still are. But now I think storms can actually be more effective because the ice is so much farther out that there's more fetch. And there's also some evidence that sea surface temperatures have risen quite a bit. And so, again, that's applying greater heat to these ice-rich bluffs that may be accelerating this erosion. And so we've actually seen, like, a shift where in the past we think that kind of the ice-rich areas were more resistant to erosion.
Right.
And now that we have these kind of warmer water conditions, that they may be more susceptible to erosion.
And how do all the people living around here react to this?
Well, okay, so in the Teshupuk Lake area, there isn't anybody living there right now. It's pretty important subsistence grounds for the Inupiat people for both hunting and fishing. But the closest community of any size is Barrow, Alaska, which is about 100 miles to the west mm-hmm. of this area. So, you know, I think there's a fairly good chance that if we weren't out there doing this work, there's been other people that have been out there doing work as well. But if scientists weren't out there doing it, people might not know about it.
Yeah. So you went out there for one reason and found something else.
Well, we went out there with an interest in trying to understand a lot of different aspects of the ecosystem related to both climate change and how to manage both wildlife and petroleum resources in that area. I would say that wasn't our main focus.
And so where do you go from here with this?
Our main focus, at least Ben Jones and I, who again is the lead author on this paper, are really interested in studying lakes that are set in permafrost, which are called thermokarst lakes. And they actually go through the same kind of sequence of erosion to some degree, where they're in ice-rich permafrost and they'll actually move or erode into these lakes and they'll expand. Sometimes they'll drain. And Ben actually just started his PhD at University of Alaska Fairbanks. And the reason he couldn't be here to do this interview is that he's out at a field camp on the Seward Peninsula studying thermokarst erosion on these lakes and actually how that process influences methane ebullition, mm-hmm. which is just methane release from lakes. And I think, as you probably are aware, that methane is a very strong greenhouse gas. And so trying to kind of understand how lake shoreline erosion influences those processes is another pretty exciting area.
Yeah. So let me just remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Science Friday from NPR News. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just had to jump in there. So that's going to be part of the next process here, understanding the lakes?
Yeah. That was actually kind of our initial focus going into this project, and it still has been, understanding the lakes in this area. It's a very lake-rich area.
Mm-hmm.
There can be upwards of 20 to 30% of the land can be covered by lakes. And so it has a huge influence, of course, for wildlife habitat, but also just how it influences the land and interacts with the climate, with the atmosphere. Just because the lakes, when they freeze, the albedo or the reflectivity of lakes is very different from when they're thawed out. So that's a big surface area that can interact with the climate. But a lot of the work the USGS is really focusing on is trying to understand how those support wildlife resources and how to try to understand how climate change is going to influence those and how we can better manage wildlife resources, knowing more about how those ecosystems might mm-hmm. change.
And the Arctic regions are the places where we see them happening the fastest.
Yeah. That's really true.
And I guess that on the one hand, that's true, but it's also a place where you can study them more easily, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really true. It's a really exciting place to be working just because things are changing so fast that it's, you know, it provides a great opportunity to try to understand just basic ecosystem processes, which I think is probably one of the most critical things that, for example, the modeling community needs to try to make, you know, sound predictions.
Well, that's what Dr. Lubchenco was talking about, was creating a climate prediction center, just like you have a weather forecasting. You have climate forecasting and know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
In those parts where, especially where they're, you know, the Arctic areas where things are changing so quickly, what do we expect to happen here? How much land do we expect to lose? You know.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. And I think how do I go about this? Okay, so I mean, currently we're working with a civil engineer who's trying to do predictive modeling, based on kind of a lumped model, so it isn't spatially distributed. And he's using some of our data sets. But the area that we're working really is pretty data poor, both in characterizing the shape of the land and the seafloor around there, but then also, you know, like the closest tidal gauge, I think, is in Prudhoe Bay.
Wow. So you know, got a lot of data to collect.
Yeah, that's right.
Before you make your model. I'm going to have to interrupt, Chris,
sure,
because we've run out of time. But I want to thank you for and wish you good luck in your research out there.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your interest, Ira.
You're welcome. Chris Arp is a research ecologist for a branch of the U.S. Geological Survey called the Alaska Science Center in Anchorage. Our program is produced by Christopher Intagliata and senior producer Annette Heist. Charles Berquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our producer for digital media. Laura Pelcher is our producer for science and the arts. Our intern is Shelley Du Bois. And Neil Rausch is our technical director and at the controls here in New York. And with help today in Second Life from Lynn Cullins, Dave Andrews, Jeff Corbin, and the University of Denver. Next week, we're going to be out in Tempe, Arizona. We'd love to have you there. See you there. If you're in the area, come join us on the campus of ASU. We'll be doing the show live from Arizona. You can surf over to our website and get more details, leave us some email, or write us the old-fashioned way at Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. And as I say, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. And where we're Twittering and blogging, Twitters are growing every day, at SciFry. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.